It's 8:48. We're going to call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation: Anderson, Gronewald, Adams, Byers, and Barnard. First thing on the agenda is a consent agenda. Well, I guess I said Bauman, but I don't see Matt, but he's here.
He's not here.
General agenda: approve minutes of meeting held October 6, 2010. There he is. Approve all claims through October 20th in the amount of $563,645.19. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve canceling checks. Check 93967 to Don Signs in the amount of $43.50 due to overpayment. Need a motion.
So moved.
Moved by Byers, seconded by Anderson. I obviously hear better on my right ear. I have a question on claims. I would like to pull the Humane Society bill. In simple fact, we don't have an interlocal agreement. I believe we need an interlocal agreement with them before we authorize payment.
Excellent point.
I don't have a problem with it. Don, do you know right offhand, or is that the only agency that we don't have an interlocal with?
I was explaining to Rex, there's several that don't specify interlocal that we probably want to go back and redo some that say interlocal.
And Mr. Chairman,
I suspect, especially if that's counting towards our 5%, you need one.
Right.
Just a little spider.
Well, there's no such thing as a little spider.
You are jumpy, aren't you?
I lost my train of thought.
Didn't have far to go, did it?
Interlocal agreement. It actually probably benefits the agency before, I know, periodically when political bodies talk about looking at interlocal agreements, people get excited. It actually benefits the agency as well, because what we've talked about before, when the money runs up, there's no obligation for the county to continue to fund any agency that we may have committed to outside of an interlocal agreement. So it's probably mutually beneficial so that everyone understands what the rules are. So.
Well, the money is budgeted, but that doesn't mean it has to be appropriated.
Correct.
Without an interlocal agreement.
Right. So it's probably a good thing to do and clarify what everyone's roles, responsibilities are.
Well, I think a good comment was in prior discussion that some of these payments might want to be made quarterly or semi-annually as opposed to lump sum, and that kind of needs to be talked about. And then both the receiving agency and us would need to know what the proposed payment schedules are going to be. And I would just suggest we don't enter into anything more than a one-year agreement, because things budget-wise and every otherwise can change in a year's time.
Do we have an amendment to pull the Humane Society bill until we get an interlocal or their claim?
I'll make that motion.
Moved by Bauman, seconded by Gronewald. We vote on the amendment first, correct? Okay, vote. 6-0. Now we'll vote on the original consent agenda. Any more discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's probably very clear to make very clear. I don't believe the intent is to not meet an obligation that we have, that we've had budgeted for $10,000. It's just to go through and clarify that step. So there's no barn burning. It's just a process. And I think it's very appropriate to do so.
Thanks, Gary. Vote.
It used to be bridges. Now we're 6-0. Burning bombs.
There's not many left. Steel.
Regular agenda comments from the public and a request for future agenda items. Marlin, Highway Superintendent report.
Chairman, I'm going to sneak out.
That's fine.
I think Michelle just went with Dr. Rice.
Okay. I found one downstairs, but there's no tripod.
Good morning.
How you doing, Marlin?
Did you get a resolution from Rick on that?
I did.
Thank you.
Do you need a copy? I mean, I just have the one.
I
gave everybody else a copy. Do you have? I'll go.
We need two originals, so I have one.
For today? For today?
That hearing today, yeah. On the comp train. Good morning.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You guys need a chair?
That's right.
Starting off with zoning, we're still, of course, we got the comp plan on the agenda later on, and then and you guys received copies of that. The wind regulations, we worked on the setbacks. We're tweaking them a little, and then it'll come to the county board. And on, in your packet, I have the last 3 years, the zoning fees and the zoning budget of expenditures. 2007-2008, we had revenue of $16,491.71. Our actual expenses were $8,685.61. 08-09, we had revenue of $14,257.25. Our actual expenses was $8,902.31. And then for 2009-2010, our revenue was $14,830.35. And our actual expenses was $12,284.39. And we've paid some of that. Is the addition is because of the agreement with Hannah Keelan on updating the comp plan and the, and doing their wind regulations. And I got copies of the revenue in there. And just, I mean, that was a question brought up a week or a couple weeks ago. So then going on to the highway department business, they are starting armor coating today. Our specs say it has to be over 60 degrees, so they have to wait till at least noon, I would say. We'll have to check on that. The Barnson South project, we're going to the south pier, should be, or south abutment, should be pouring that any time now. It's all formed up and all the rebar's in it. They're working on the piers, forming them up. The Beatrice North project's on bid letting for tomorrow. And in Weimar 1, we're still working on railroad right away. Then I have included in your packet the some local quotes I got. And that's just for your information. You know, we need to talk at Road and Bridge Committee more about it. It's the, is a skid steer we talked about a little bit. Apparently the local dealers, if they do a lease, it'd be a longer term one. The one vendor is offering a year-to-year lease for $2,500. It's just for your information. What's that?
I'm just talking about the loader.
The skid steer. Yeah. Thanks.
I think Dave said something about looking for a good used one.
Yeah, I've been looking on different.
And I can, well, we didn't talk at Road and Bridge at all about it, I guess, this week, but there's all kinds of,
right.
You know, what, you get magazines, too, as well as the Internet. There's
right.
Tons of them out there.
Yeah, there is. There's.
And you can tell that by the discount price on the new ones, like from the Case IH dealer. Are you sure you want a bucket with no teeth? I mean, you can do absolutely no digging unless you got at least stub teeth. But
well, I guess in the
you can always get the scarifier teeth that bolt
right.
on.
Right.
So I mean,
most of them do,
yeah,
or have two buckets. I mean, at some
or two
point,
buckets.
If you need something really soft, like the smooth asphalt or something, you may want to have a second bucket. But
right, and I was thinking too of snow, moving snow
for
and
snow.
Stuff, so.
Probably gonna want two buckets at some point.
Okay.
Then, but
all right. Well, and we'll talk more about that at Road and Bridge and get some more ideas on that. Then on the crews, we got the bridge crew. They're finishing up on inspections. Asphalt crew's doing a lot of patching and overlays. And then the dirt crew, they're working on putting in the bigger tubes, taking out smaller bridges. And been a good fall for getting a lot of work done so far.
Same way.
And that's all I have till the hearing at 10 o'clock. So.
That's the way your report should be, like that. Thank you. Dr. Rice, you're up.
All right. I have some maps and graphics, so I guess the question be is where would you like me to put the screen relative to everybody else so we can get this going?
Where I don't
put it in front of the news media guys.
Usually we stuck it in that corner, didn't we? The
yeah.
Far.
What about in front of the no smoking sign?
Whichever way you want it.
Yeah, over by the door. Will
that
work?
That door.
We can always slide the table back if you need to.
I got a seat for Danny over here. Garrett will have to sit on the floor.
He can sit on the step.
Younger guys can take more abuse like that, so I'll be glad to sit on the floor.
I'll just sit with the sheriff. I'm safer.
I don't know about that. I've seen him shoot.
Oh, yeah. Then we don't want to be in the room, right?
That's
I figure if a guy's running, he's got a chance of getting hit.
Yeah. Come over here and cause trouble.
As long as you don't have a Remington, they're supposed to go off without pulling the trigger. Isn't that
a big
show on CNBC? They have a big special. A lot of Remington rifles seem to fire without pulling the trigger.
That's what I shoot. Oh, crap.
It's a Remington 700 series, I think.
They used to make a lot of
things. Oh, okay.
Mine's a public
870 and 1187.
With the judge.
Promo is a big special on that. Sounds like a bunch of bull to me. There's got to be more to the story.
I've still got my first shot.
If your gun goes off and you didn't mean it, who's going to admit to say I didn't have the safe one and I shot him?
That's,
you don't see many of them.
Of course, they got a real weird-looking worker. It's basically Remington. They don't sell it to anybody, and they cut corner. I mean, it's what a lot of them could try in controversial stories, you know, that...
I hadn't heard that.
I'm going to eat some cow.
No, sir. I'm going to the zoo after this.
Take him out. They all got the day off.
They got the next 3 days.
The political screen is a little crooked.
Can I go?
No. We can shut the lights down. Gary, would you hit the lights, please?
I about jumped. Just like at home. Do this.
Lock out, tag out.
What's with that screen, Chairman?
I'll tell you. As long as the picture is...
It's leaning to the right, what does that tell you?
We're just lucky we have that. Where I grew up, we use sheets.
What did you eat this morning, man?
I don't know.
One of them days?
It's harvest. Yeah. It's a goofy season. Ask the football team.
Yeah, don't ask them much. I kind of like it over here, actually. Since the county attorney don't show up.
You're 4 inches too tall for that chair.
There's full of it.
I'm not, yep, I heard it.
I couldn't disagree with you more. I don't even want any elevator shoes.
Sorry.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
At your request, I'm here to kind of give you an update on the Gage County EMS and kind of where we're at with a lot of stuff going on.
Can you turn
that? Turn that microphone there on the table. Just kind of
pull it over. Is this microphone?
It doesn't have to be very close, but just.
You are being recorded.
Oh, I am being recorded. Uh-oh. So I gotta watch what I say. Okay. So what I'd like to do is give you an update on where we're at with EMS in Gage County. And I apologize. I hit the wrong button. Okay. First thing I would like to discuss with everybody, and I think this was maybe mentioned at your last meeting, but I just want to reiterate it. I want to actually get you and just kind of go over the issue of discoverability. One of the large areas that caused some consternation among the rescue services was the concept of us at a county level creating a standard where there is some degree of accountability, quality assurance mechanisms, getting your charts done in regular time, and getting en route within a 5-minute period of time. There was some concerns at a local level, city level, with a couple of rescue services that if we incorporated quality standards into a contract, that should a local entity, say, be civilly sued for medical malpractice, that an attorney would have the ability to go into our quality assurance, look at, are they responding, are they doing things the way they're supposed to be doing? it had been my contention that this was not allowable, that state statute at the state level shields quality assurance and protects it. And so there had been a kind of an ongoing discussion about that. We reviewed at the state level last month at the EMS quarterly board meeting with the state attorney two different statutes, and I am more than happy to email those. I can get those to Don, but I think I'd already emailed it to Matt and Rex for dissemination, so you should actually have those. But basically, it covered two different areas. One was, if you engage in quality assurance, do you have to testify in a civil trial? The answer is no. Your QA comments are indeed non-discoverable, which is what I had been arguing with the local entities for a good year now. However, in a different set of statutory regulations, there was comment that QA could be discoverable under extraordinary circumstances in a civil lawsuit. So the state attorney then basically had to discuss what's the definition of an extraordinary circumstance. In other words, under what situation could a judge say, no, your QA needs to be uncovered and discussed? An example of an extraordinary circumstance was something along the lines of that there was an accusation that a rescue service actually deliberately murdered a patient. That would be an example of an extraordinary circumstance. You get the idea that it would take an awful lot to uncover anything that we do at a QA level. So bringing it back to the interlocal agreement, the bottom line is that it pretty much looks like, unless there's something just really unusual or a judge rules in a really squirrely fashion, that any QA standards that we put in place, as long as the QA process is done in a QA peer review committee, is non-discoverable. Now, that being said, and where it applies to a meeting like today, from here on out, now that we have the interlocal agreement signed, I will have to give you in my report, as it comes back to that QA, I will simply have to report to you whether we're pretty much meeting the standards. What I won't be allowed to do is go into details with you, because anything that I take outside of a QA peer review committee, anything that I take out of that room would be discoverable. So as long as I keep it in the confines of an EMS advisory council, it stays there. Okay, I hate to, you know, quote what they say about Las Vegas, about what goes on in there stays in there, but that's really essentially what the peer review committee, the quality assurance group, would be. Whatever gets said in that room stays in that room. But it also means that the local groups, the people that send representatives, so if Cortland sends a representative, Claytonia sends a representative, Carl and I are in the room, if we then go down to the local bar and we're talking about what happened at the meeting, all of that information is legally discoverable. They could actually take a conversation done outside of that room and tie it back to a QA process and then open it up. So the point is, and when I meet with the local services for our first EMS Advisory Council, I will actually be having them understand, and I'll probably actually have them all sign a non-disclosure indicating that everything that we do inside that room is not to be discussed outside. That'll then give the cities the local protection that they were afraid they wouldn't have, but at the same time will allow the county to enforce a degree of accountability over the standards that we set. So basically, the best of both worlds. We get what we need. We get the standards that we want, as long as we do it in a medical quality peer review environment. So I just wanted to finish up on that discussion. Now, before I move on to kind of what's happening with the rescue services, does anybody have any questions about that whole process before I leave from that? Fair enough. Okay, let's first talk about Beatrice Rescue. So far, year to date, they've done 1,789 runs. And what I've got next to it, this is an actual map of where the actual clusters of runs are. And I apologize that these are small. Now that I know they're coming up this way, at my next meeting when you have me back, I will print these out, a hard copy, so you can see. The smaller blue circles will have double-digit numbers showing where they're doing runs. But basically, of the 1,789, about 1,500 are right in the Beatrice area. And, Carl, I don't know if you can read that number down by Wymore, but about... how many is it going to be, about 70 or 80? Okay. It's about 70 or 80 runs are down in that area, and that's the Wymore, just Blue Springs area. You also see that there's numbers down in Barniston. So what this does is, for the first time, is we can actually start to see now where is each rescue service responding to, where are the clusters of runs going to. So with Beatrice, you almost get kind of a picture of where they're going as far as their runs. There is, so far this year, we had talked about the STEMI program that we wanted to incorporate. It's now operational and has been for about 8 months. It's the first successful STEMI program in the state of Nebraska. They did finish their critical care training, and they do currently now have 2 mobile intensive care units, which are operational. They're currently covering Wymore, and they're also now the primary transport for Odell. And I will talk briefly about that, because I know there are some questions as to why that occurred. Beatrice Rural Rescue. Currently, to date, we don't have any runs from them entered into the system. I don't know if they just had a dry year or if they just didn't understand that they still need to enter runs. There was some confusion with Pickerel and Beatrice Rural. There's an old nomenclature, what they call a QRT, a quick response team. And Beatrice Rural sometimes calls themselves a quick response team. Pickerel does the same thing. The problem is that as long as you have an EMT in that service, and if they're licensed as a BLS service, they're required to fill out medical paperwork on every run that they go on. But if you're truly just a first responder QRT, they have no obligations to fill out any medical reports. We haven't gotten any on Beatrice Rural, and so I don't know if they just simply didn't understand that even though they think they're a QRT, because they have an EMT or two in the mix, they're required to report. So at our EMS Advisory Council, I'm going to be talking to them about this, and I'm going to have Carl work with them to see if there's any training issues that are needed. However, just to give you an idea on how busy they are, in 2009, they had a total of 18 runs. And you see that most of them actually occurred right around Beatrice, and then a few of them south of where 77 takes that curve. Other than that, that's where the majority of their runs were. And really, they're probably going to be doing some soul searching, looking at where do they go in 2011. Do they remain a basic life support service, or do they back off and just become a first responder agency working in cooperation with Brian Dakey's group? Claytonia Rescue, so far in 2010, has had 26 runs. The two blue areas are where their heaviest runs were. The smaller orange circles are where there's actually individual runs. So you see that almost the entire bulk of Claytonia, even though they're really more over... Let me come back. Even though Claytonia is right here, believe it or not, the bulk of their runs are actually closer to Cortland. And that would make some degree of sense, because Claytonia is the primary transport unit for Cortland, as they don't transport people. What I found interesting is that there really appear to be not a lot of sick people getting injured or ill over in the Claytonia area. So they appear to be doing the bulk of their runs out to the east of them. They did sign the interlocal agreement. I will be meeting with them on October the 28th to go over their runs and also get all of their policies and procedures updated. Cortland, so far this year, has only had 16 runs. They're a non-transport service, and you see a kind of an overlap if you look at where the runs are. Again, an overlap with Claytonia, but again, because Claytonia does their transport for them. They did sign the interlocal, and the only thing that's unique about Cortland is I have suggested to them, again, that they really go ahead and try to relicense out as an ALS non-transport. I think it would be very helpful for the northern area of Gage County if they would do that. They have several nurses on their staff, and they could become an advanced life support service, but they've been a bit skittish about it. They've been concerned about potential liability issues. They were concerned that if something were to happen at the rescue service, that their individual nursing licenses could be revoked, which really is not true. Nevertheless, they're still concerned, and so they've really kind of shied away from becoming an ALS. As they talked about it with Claytonia, at this point in time, they've been content to remain a BLS service at this point in time. And if that's the level of care they want, then that's where they're at. Odell, has had 10 runs so far in 2010. They did sign the interlocal agreement. We did change their primary transport from Diller to Beatrice. I want to explain why that was done. Before Diller did their primary transport, actually Beatrice was the unit that actually came down and did it. And for reasons that I never really understood, that was moved to over to Diller. The problem that I had as a physician medical director, and the reason why I moved it back, was Larry Stanichek and Mike, and I'm sorry, yeah, thank you, actually sat down and brought a couple of case calls to my attention that concerned me at a physician level, where Diller was actually arguing with them in front of the patients as to the fact that they wanted to do the transport. And what concerned me about this is that one of them was over a small child under 2 years of age that had actually been under full respiratory arrest. Beatrice Rescue, an advanced life support paramedic group, was on scene to transport this child, and Diller, a BLS service not equipped, was actually arguing in front of the family that they wanted to transport this patient. I felt that that was actually medically really inappropriate, so I had to make a decision about getting back to saving lives in Gage County. How are we going to save more lives? Well, Beatrice has the critical care transport team. Diller does not, and with Diller, I don't have any authority over them. They're outside of Gage County. Their medical director is hard to get in touch with. And so trying to deal with raising the bar with Diller was simply not an option. And so that being said and done, it was simply easier to simply move the transport back to Beatrice, where really it should have been all along. As I looked at the actual, and I did study the actual arrival times for Diller and Beatrice, the arrival time for both units is the same. So there's no loss in the rescue service showing up. So there's no time lost, and what you gain is you get the Beatrice Rescue Team being there with advanced life support for those critical care needs. Brian Dakey was very happy to take that back over and reestablish that. I know that there was some letters circulated saying that it was disrupting the mutual aid agreements, and that's not what this was. The mutual aid agreement is a fire agreement, and this is, again, separate from medical, which has entirely different rules and regulations. In fact, the letter that I sent to Diller Rescue, I actually thanked them for their kind support over the years and just told them that simply for other reasons, we had made a decision to go back to Beatrice Rescue. And even in my letter, very specifically said, this in no way negates any mutual aid agreements, and we certainly can use your help from time to time when we call upon you, and we would greatly appreciate that ongoing effort. And so we left it very, very supportive and very open, and just simply did that rather than going down the road of trying to fight over some of the professional issues that were going on at a lower level. We just simply left it above board. But I know that some people tried to raise some issues about that. I wanted to explain why that decision was made. I didn't feel that it was appropriate for people in respiratory arrest, especially a child, to be transported by a basic life support service. That just simply is inappropriate. Any questions about Odell? Pickerel, again, they are all first responders, but they have one EMT. And so we had to work with them this year to try to decide, are they going to become truly a quick response team, or do they want to stay licensed out as a basic life support service? That being said and done, so far this year, they haven't shown hardly any runs at all. In fact, I had to look at a five-year total for them. They only have 12 runs entered in the system for a five-year period, which gives you an idea of their total run volume. They really don't have a lot. They usually are used to help out with extrication and other issues with motor vehicle accidents. I feel that they need some training to enter the medical records, so we're going to be talking to them about that at the first county EMS advisory meeting, because they do have one EMT. But again, the question is going to really come up, how much information do we want out of them? How much information do we really need out of them? Even if I just had basic run times and calls and dates, that would, from my perspective, almost be enough out of that group, because they really don't provide a lot of care once they get on scene. Brian Dakey's group is almost usually on scene about the time that they even arrive, from that perspective. Let's talk about the EMS Advisory Council. We're going to have our first meeting October the 28th. I'm going to be setting up the ground rules for privacy. I'm going to be discussing with them the state statutes that I briefly advised all of you on. And we're going to be doing a discussion on data entry. We're going to be taking our first look at response times and looking at where they're at to try to start to set those benchmarks in for them. And we're going to be also covering examples of good charting on a positive end, and we're going to also look at charting that needs improvement from a medical care standpoint. For the block of rescue services that have signed the interlocal agreement, that's kind of a summary. I do have one more slide if you want on Wymore, but if you don't, we don't need to at this point in time.
Chairman, I say show it.
Okay.
And how about Adams?
Adams, I don't, because they decided not to sign the interlocal agreement, so I haven't been their medical director now for...
10 months?
Yeah, nearly 10 months. So at a county level, I really don't even know what they're doing. I could look at them at a state level, but I wouldn't be able to share that information from a state perspective. So I really don't have a lot of information on that at this point in time. Wymore Rescue, up until the time of their closure, had performed 106 runs. Here's their distribution. Actually, I can tell you, because I looked more closely at it, the bulk of their runs are within their city limits, actually. About 20 runs actually occur to Blue Springs, Dead North, and then they get a smattering of Barniston and over in, I think, the Liberty area. So, believe it or not, the bulk of what they do is actually more confined to city limits. Since their closure, I'm actually happy to say that 24 people stepped up to the plate and have volunteered to actually join the service now that we've cleaned the roster out. Of that, we've got 5 that are going to be drivers, 5 support staff to do clerical work, and 14 people that will actually be EMTs or better. A couple of them are LPNs, and 3 of them have no training at all and are actually taking the EMT class here in Beatrice that started on October 5th. So within the next 12 months, I'll actually have 14 EMTs on that group. That's really a huge improvement over where they were 4 or 5 months ago, where they were struggling to keep 4 people on their roster. They are very close to actually opening their doors. They just need a couple of items. They need some pagers, so if there's a call that goes out, they actually know that there's a call. There were some inter-city squabbling between the fire side and the rescue side about who owned what equipment, and so the rescue side is going to have to buy some brand new equipment, pagers, radios, some vests when they're out on the highway, so some basic things. But they're actually, I would say, literally within a couple of weeks of opening their doors back up. All they need to do from my perspective as a medical director is I want them to sign a code of conduct, as much of the issues that they had were due to bickering and fighting. So I'm actually making them sign a code of ethics. Once they get that signed and they get basic pagers so they know there's a rescue call, from my perspective, they're ready to open their doors again. So they're very close to actually stepping back into the game. I'm actually proud of them for that. So we're actually, believe it or not, after all the hours, we're right at the end of having to finish up that whole process.
Dr. Rice, where are they? How are they going to fund their equipment that they've got to have then? Have they figured out a way to fund it?
Yeah, they have.
Okay, that's all we need.
Believe it or not, they're learning how to be autonomous. They're learning how to live on a budget. They're learning how to live with themselves. It's good stuff.
That's all I need.
I might make a suggestion on pagers and some of that equipment if they need. Matt, you might talk to Neil Pinsent over at the Hospital Foundation. When I was there, we bought some of this equipment, I know, for Adams, and we bought some for some of the other rescue units, and maybe that could relieve some of the financial pressure.
And once we're under interlocal agreement with them, then we can help them. But I think that's a great resource that maybe he could pass on to them.
I can pass the information on to Max Allen, who I appointed as the rescue chief, so, and I'm sure that he would be more than happy to figure out how and where to do that. There's also one city councilman there, Beth Hoekstra, who has just taken, I think, almost a personal level of involvement, and she's basically working alongside of Max to take care of paperwork, look for grants, anything else that they can do. So the nice thing is you're actually seeing really more of an entire citywide involvement in getting that service operational, which is the way it should be. So a lot of positive, and yes, it has cost the county some hours on my involvement, but in the end, I think it's going to help when you look at the number of runs that Beatrice has done down there over, you know, probably it was 70 to 80 runs. This is, outside of Beatrice, Gage County's largest single area of medical need. So it is important. Also, and to let you all know, the new group is absolutely very eager to enter into the interlocal agreement. They want to cooperate. They want to participate. And I really do think that once they open their doors, I think they're actually going to be qualified and capable of doing just that. So once they open, I would recommend that you welcome them back into the fold. All right, that's the real end of my presentation.
Questions?
Thank you, Dr.
Very good
Rice.
Job. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank Dr. Rice for coming down, and it does take quite a bit of time, but you can see the enormous nature of this project, and if nothing else, just the square miles that are covered by these EMS services, and you can see that Dr. Rice is trying to promote, and I believe the county is consistent in trying to promote the volunteer squads that are out there, because of the Beatrice being the only paid professionals, they just cannot do it themselves. Those other squads are vital to be out there working together. And we'll try to continue on a quarterly basis, have you come, and we'll try to pick a short agenda, because it does take a lot of time, and there's a lot of information, and it's viable that we have the ability to have that time. So, again, thanks for coming down.
You bet.
Thank you. Doc, have you met Kathy? She'll be on the board in January. Have you met Kathy? She'll be on the board in January. Did I get you again?
Is that right? Against her?
Yeah. Okay. Gus, update.
Oh, boy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're probably aware of some of this since you got a letter, the same letter I got from jail standards. We were found to be non-compliant after this last year's annual inspection. And a lot of it was due to the life safety codes when the fire marshal came in and did his inspection, which I have to have prior to the jail inspection coming down. Years ago, the state used to do inspections. They delegated the local authorities here to do it. Due to, I think, some retirement and other issues, it's gone back to the state now, and so that's why you have the state fire marshal doing the inspections. And so since September 24th, I have taken the following steps on that. I immediately began some corrective action on the items that I knew that we probably could get taken care of in a short period of time that would be not a lot of money involved, if any. And out of the 27 document issues that we had, I think we have 11 have been corrected since we received that letter. I also appeared in front of the jail standards board up in Lincoln on October 15th. Gage County was on the agenda that day, and I made a presentation. After my appearance, they commended me on trying to get on this immediately and taking a proactive approach on it, because it really should be no surprise to any of us that this was going to be out there for us to be dealing with. So at the next quarterly meeting, I told them I wanted to appear again and have a corrective action plan that we can all live with for down the road. The 22nd of this month, which I think is this coming Friday, I'm going to meet with the State Fire Marshal's office and the inspector here. We're going to work on a corrective action plan to where I need to have timetables set for us on each of these issues so we can work on. They might be from a few weeks out to maybe a year or two. We don't know. It depends what he tells me to do and what he wants. Once that plan is in place and he and I agree to that, then I'm going to bring it to the board. I want the board hopefully to sign off on it, and then I'll appear back probably in January at the next quarterly meeting up the state, let them know this is what we're looking at doing. When he initially did an inspection, he did not set a date on there as far as getting things done, which surprised the board up there. But he did a lot of that is because I asked him to come in and took the proactive approach first to have him figure out what we're going to have to deal with. So I'm sure it'll be a deadline for us when we get this plan in place, but at least we'll have something to start looking at. Hopefully it'll help us to budget for down the road, and also they'll be able to see working towards that goal. I've attached to it the letter, which you probably received about the same time I did, from the state, jail standards, and then the inspection report from the inspector that day he was there for fire marshal. So that's about it. In a nutshell, like I said, we've got 11 of them done already. They were pretty minor ones, so we just started getting on it and doing it. The rest, there are some that will take a little time, some will be pretty expensive. My understanding is because the facility is of its age and doesn't have dividing walls for fire codes, he considers the entire facility corrections and not the sheriff's office. My office is considered part of the jail. So that's why it's listed all as corrections. So.
Yes, Matt.
I'd just like to thank Gus. I know that as he's gone through this process, you've called me multiple times on the finance committee, where's this coming from, and I appreciate being in the loop on that, and I think Gus has tried to do a good job of letting us know that there's going to be some expense there, and I think he's tried to be as frugal as possible. You know, you've learned how to go through the bidding process for the windows. You know, we see the claims come across, and you know, we do have money budgeted aside specifically to deal with the jail, not renovation, but improvement needs specific to it being an old facility, where in the past we didn't track that specifically, so we'll be able to see what those expenses are from year to year. So.
Anything else?
No, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gus.
Committee reports.
Finance committee, of course, met on Monday, and we just went through, of course, the claims and had some good discussions and... not a whole lot to report out of there. Scrutinizing the claims as they come across, we had some discussions about some of the agencies as well. And I did talk to Don, and I guess from a finance standpoint, the lease purchase, first payment for the motor grader won't be until January. And again, those are spread out to be quarterly payments. So our budgeted amount will actually expended this year will be half. Because of the quarterly payments, won't have made any payments for the first 6 months. So we'll start to see those come across. Did you end up, supposedly the check was in the mail from Emeritus? Okay, so the notoriously check's in the mail, we didn't get it. But we've got the motor grader, took delivery a couple weeks ago on that, so that process will come up. But that's why you haven't seen that claim come across, is the first payment isn't due until January, I believe.
January 15th.
So. Any other committee reports?
Well, Building and Grounds did meet, and Ron, our chair, is gone. We have finished up things that are going on as far as the north and south windows, and Dave, I don't know if it's anything else. Basically, we're trying to get wrapped up and do checklists and figure out where we're at, and met with Gary on lighting and some of the things we have concerns on there in some of the offices, and we'll be working over that over the next several weeks.
Probably the biggest thing, just for general awareness, is that there's going to be some additional computer, internet-type cabling issues and some electrical that were through additions and miscommunications and some things that were overlooked in the original plan that it sounded like going to be maybe covered financially, and then some other things that were just overlooked that are going to have to be additions. Are in the works. They're going to be doing a thorough survey of the offices as to what kind of upgrade needs are, and then deal with it from there. So there'll be some upcoming issues on wiring, basically. Okay. And there's a little bit of an issue on the generator, but that's getting worked out, I hope, internally.
Gary?
How much money do we still owe Berger, and what's our back on that? Do we have quite a bit left, or has he got most of his money?
Can't tell you without getting answers.
That's what I'm going to ask Ron. Ron's got all those, got a lot of that. I just don't have that readily available.
We do need to talk to Bergeron, though. I was sitting here this morning when Don walked in and turned on her lights, turned and looked at me and said, "Look at this." And then she clapped her hands, and they didn't come on. She stomped her foot, and then they come on. So, I mean...
The clapper didn't work.
The only good thing is she does that a lot. So.
Yeah, I mean,
so the lights will usually be on.
I see a lot of this wiring hanging from ceilings and everything yet. That's
So there's some touch up. Any other committee reports?
I just talk a little bit about the legislative conference. Just a couple of minutes. We did have Speaker Flood, Senator Flood, who came out and gave a basic outline of where the legislature would be going the next couple of years, and obviously everybody in the legislature is pretty much saying
no money, no money, no money, and no money, but things have changed some as far as revenues are concerned, and so, and possibly they're even talking about using the rainy day fund a little bit now, so that could be kind of positive. The governor came and gave about a 45-minute presentation on where he felt that we were, where we are, and where we won't go, I guess, is pretty much where he is. And Senator Adams, who is chairman of the Education Committee, just an excellent presentation. I was very impressed with his presentation, and very factual, and very comfortable working with the group, and had a conversational type of presentation, very bright, and obviously making us aware of the fact that as they will have to make reductions in the state aid formula to education, this is going to come back to the school districts, which basically comes back to county taxes, which basically we get all the heat for. And so he wanted to make sure that everybody is aware that they're trying hard, that as the, some of the stimulus money that the governor's used goes away, and they have to make some changes. There will be some pressures there also. So, you know, the county, the legislative committee of NACO has over 20 issues that at this point they're talking about before the session starts, relative, obviously, to taxes, motor vehicles, elections, just our general county operations, law enforcement, and they'll be looking at as far as recommendations when the legislature gets in session. So it was a good session. I thought one day, but it was very good and very informative, and people were very cooperative with one another, and I thought that was good.
Anything else? I guess we'll adjourn until 10 o'clock. Who made that appointment at 10?
I heard you.
Hey, Rex.
Well,
oh, that's it.
All right. Okay,
I'm ready. All right, it's the clock clicked over to 10 o'clock. I'd like to call the Gage County Board of Supervisors back into regular session after recess. Please, I guess, vote your attendance. At least we used to do that. We do it by observation. We do have a quorum, although Fleece and who's the other guy? Adams. Adams are gone. It's time to hear recommendations from our Planning and Zoning Commission on the 2010-2011 update of the County Comprehensive Plan. And Lisa, please.
For the record, my name is Lisa Wiggin, and I'm the chairman for Planning and Zoning. So the Planning and Zoning Commission has been working with Hannah Keelan the last 6 months on updating our comp plan, which we are recommending approval for today. The 10-year plan actually takes us into 2020, and it would be an update to our existing plan, going back first adopted in 2010. It's hard to believe that we've been in zoning for almost 12 years now. Dave and I were chatting earlier, but I know that you will all agree that it is a process that's necessary for Gage County. As a commission, when you have a chance to look through it, we concentrated on the potential for growth and development in the rural areas. The plan is intended to provide policy guidelines. It enables residents and elected officials of our county to utilize the current census status, which would be population, income, economics, and housing trends, as we plan for future growth in Gage County. You've got to take special note also to a couple maps in the comp plan update, which the first one is showing every residence in Gage County as they look. And also the second map looks at the future land use map, which shows potential areas for growth as projections come in, and also, you know, showing where A1 through A4 is at. There's a couple changes that we'll chat about, just an update on railroad and things like that we'll touch upon after a while. But as we as a planning commission take into consideration specific projects, the commission's goal is to really provide opportunities and incentives for development. And so, of course, we all want to try to encourage economical stability and strengthen the overall tax base for Gage County. And a good example of that would be the hearing that we had last month as we worked on our wind energy regulations, where we had several landowners coming in and expressing their concerns over setback requirements. So We, in fact, have completed the WIN regs, and we will be presenting them to this board in November. So Lonnie Dixon, who is here, the planner with Hannah Keelan, who we have worked with, is here today to give you a better insight into particulars about our plan and to answer any specific questions that you might have in mind. So I'm going to turn it over to Lonnie quick, if that's okay with the chair.
Absolutely.
Should we formally open the public hearing, Mr. Chairman?
We can do updates. I don't know. We've done it both ways. A lot of times we lay out the recommendations and then we have the public talk. Isn't that how we've always done it?
I think so.
Do we have a problem with that? I think this is just a briefing and then we'll open the hearing and ask if there's any public comment. And so, Lonnie, why don't we continue? We'll do it in this format.
Basically, to build on Lisa's overview, she did a wonderful job putting on all the highlights that we talked about. But just to reinforce a couple of the points that she touched on, 12 years ago when we did your original document, one of the underlying premises was to protect agricultural land for agricultural use. And so we kind of focused on the different geographic zones of Gage County. Somewhat looking at the 77 Expressway Corridor, likewise hard surface county roads and state highways beyond the 77 Corridor, also acknowledging the premise that there had been an infusion of non-farm households into the county, into the, basically the northern third of the county, compared to the southern two-thirds of the county. So as that transpired, we tried to provide provisions for all economic development incentives to allow livestock confinement facilities in places where they're most appropriate, but also make provisions where setbacks were adequate to the point where we would try to alleviate nuisance complaints and things of that nature. So fundamentally, trying to preserve and protect agricultural land, but also allow economic development and growth in places where it was most suited, and fundamentally limiting the potential for conflict between non-agricultural development and agricultural development in the county environs. And so, as you know, that last or the first comprehensive plan primarily focused on allowing that infusion of non-agricultural dwellings and subdivisions in the northern portion of the county, as well as a little bit along the 77 corridor, but preserving and protecting the core areas above and beyond that to the east and west and things of that nature, where there are those concentrations of agricultural production lands. So again, we reviewed that concept when we approached this update and reinforced that by revisiting the existing land use scene where that infusion of new non-farm households had been growing over the last 10 years. And again, that was verified by the concentration of the majority of those new households in the northern third of the county. Also looking at the alternative energy systems that have been coming on to play, LB 197, which is now actually a state statute, 70-2001 to 2005, is the provision that allows net metering. That net metering process focuses on five different alternative energy systems: wind, solar, biomass, hydroelectric, and geothermal. And from the planning and zoning standpoint, we were most concerned working with the consensus of the Planning Commission in terms of the heights potential of windmill towers and their potential, you know, for a fall zone related pretty much correlates to the original provisions for cellular towers in essence, you know, in their placement and proximity and setback requirements from property lines and county road systems. So we talked about that integration of kind of new trends into the county in terms of alternative wind energy systems to allow private owners as well as business owners to potentially reduce their cost and reliance on the utility grid. And if by fact they create more energy than they consume, the net metering provisions mandate that the utility districts buy that overage back from those sources. So those were part and parcel of the update of the goals, policies, and action strategies. Likewise, that focus on the future land use plan in terms of comparing what growth you had seen in the previous 10 years what our now expectations are for the next 10 years as your county moves forward and approaches the opportunities available to it. In terms of zoning regulations, when those come along next month, you'll see that the majority of the changes focus just on kind of the wind energy elements, if you will, both the small-scale personal net metering types of alternative energies, as well as the large-scale windmill farm potentials. And I will say, working with the Planning Commission, my knowledge was incrementally expanded as that process went along. Perhaps heretofore, what the state had seen were concentrations of large windmill farms in a concentrated 160-acre provision and things of that regard. But now you're being proposed with long linear systems along hard surface roads and multitudes of rural entities working together as a consortium, or as we refer to in the regs as aggregated projects. So nonetheless, those systems were integrated into the goals and policies of the comprehensive plan update. By the way, the update is one part and parcel finished, a new insert to the existing cover and the rest of the documentation in the front, and we have the existing comprehensive plan by formula as a reference to what's happened in the county, and with the incremental update, what we see happening over the next 10 years. So with that, I'll turn it back to you for questions.
So the recommendation is that we, is this the final document that we have?
Correct. It's an addendum document that gets stuck in the front of your current comp plan, changing the cover and updating the entire document.
During the hearing process, we'll talk about changes that maybe ought to be made, and et cetera, and then we'll close the hearing, and then we'll actually go about either accepting or amending this document.
Certainly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everybody square with that? Okay, we have received then the recommendation from Planning and Zoning Commission, and we are ready to have a motion to open the public hearing to hear support for and or opposition to the 2020 comp plan for Gage County.
I'd move to open the public hearing.
Moved by Byers, seconded by Gary. Any discussion? Please vote. Okay, the hearing is now open. Do we have any public that cares to come forth to the hearing? Any public input at this point? Otherwise, it'll be the board and staff start whacking at it or nibbling at it, whichever the case. Is there a motion to close the hearing, and being no one step forward?
So move.
So move by Byers, seconded by Martin. Any discussion? Please vote. Okay, the hearing is closed at 10:10, and I think it opened at 10:09. Was that about
10:10 was and open.
Oh, give it at least a minute. Don't
right.
Make it.
I guess.
Okay. A motion would then be in order to approve or disapprove the comp plan as presented to us by the Planning and Zoning Board. Over here, anybody? Nobody wants to approve it?
I would move to approve.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Second, Mr. Barnard. Second. Any further discussion?
No, wait a minute. There's a resolution to approve.
Oh, we got to read. Oh, and the approval would be for resolution number 1032. We'll let you read that into the agenda.
We'll let Marlon read that. That's his resolution.
Marlon, you want to read it? Boy, pass the buck day here.
I got it.
Goes. I'll read it.
She says she'll read it.
The Gage County Board of Supervisors has been presented with a recommendation from the Planning and Gage County Planning and Zoning Commission to approve the 2010-2020 Comprehensive Plan and Zoning Plan for Gage County, and whereas this matter was discussed at open, published, and public hearing on would be October 20th, and whereas the Gage County Board of Supervisors has properly published and has placed on its agenda the issue of approving or disapproving this amendment to the zoning regulations. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Gage County Board of Supervisors that in consideration of the recommendation of the Gage County Planning and Zoning Commission and the public input received by the Gage County Board of Supervisors on this date, that the Gage County Board of Supervisors does hereby adopt the 2010-2020 Comprehensive Planning and Zoning Plan for Gage County as found in Exhibit A, attached hereto and made a part hereof.
Okay, so we do have a motion and second. We now have some time for discussion. Is there any discussion on the plan? I have a couple thoughts, Lisa. I think you alluded to it. The maps are quite outdated, particularly with reference to the railroads that pass through the county, and it would be very misleading if we had a document as presented here. Let's see. Had a couple other questions. Oh, this may be more from the Hannah Keelan type thing, Lonnie. In the area about the plan is to create a program to demolish an estimated 32 units of substantially deteriorated dwellings within the next 10 years, what programs or what kind of things are available to go about doing that?
The Department of Economic Development is kind of the overseer of what's referred to as community development block grants. Those types of grants are available specifically for municipalities as well as for county jurisdictions. And there's umbrellas of that in terms of infrastructure, planning, public works, things of that nature, but also there's a provision for housing funding. And they have housing funds for housing rehabilitation for both owner-occupied and renter-occupied housing types that routinely are also implemented in county jurisdictions. So
that's what you usually think of in terms of small towns. They'll use the CDBG block grants
right.
to do insulating or siding or whatever. But how does that deal with demolishing?
To expand on my previous discussion, DED has focused on the desire of many municipalities across the state of late, as well as county jurisdictions, that, you know, how do we get rid of our dilapidated households that are an eyesore in some of our communities, an eyesore in some of our county areas, in terms of providing enough funding sources for acquisition, demolition, land use fees and things of that regard to return that parcel and remove potential health and safety issues from those jurisdictions and potentially, especially in municipalities, take advantage of that existing lot that has access to street, water, sewer, and all that infrastructure. So in essence, building a new house on reduced cost because that infrastructure is already there compared to being on the periphery of a community and extending water, sewer, and streets.
Are there any active programs anywhere that you know?
I can answer that, Dave.
Yeah.
Public Health Solutions has been working on that and has gone through all of five-county area and through all of our smaller communities looking at dilapidated. And they have a brownfield, what they call a brownfield program, and some dollars available. They're working with those communities. In addition, not only to those properties, some of them are being occupied and are very dangerous to families, but lead control, lead hazard control represents those. So Public Health Solutions working on that. They're also doing a partnership with Blue Valley Community Action relative to that very issue. So they're working on those now.
Some communities have, let's just say wealthy individuals step forward that voluntarily help clean up the town. Others have developed foundations that have done it. But I was
right.
just curious of whether there are any state in this. What Danny said is a program that...
There's starting to be a growing amount of funding sources
for
that particular issue. Likewise, stimulating from the federal stimulus packages that have come into play. Again, that's based upon concentrated county areas that have higher rates of defaults on their mortgages and things of that regard, but there has been an infusion in Nebraska of that federal as well as the CDBG money sources for just the topics that you're talking about, Mr.
Okay, another question I had while you're up. On page 2.9, where it talks about transportation systems and talks okay. about coordinating with the state and continuing to develop our system, and then it talks specifically about the upgrades to South 66th Road. Very much in favor of that. I think the board has continued support. Just wondering if we shouldn't, along with that, mention our desire to upgrade Hickory Road all the way to Hoyg. I mean, that's in our long-term road plans. It's in our federal aid request. Shouldn't that be in our comp plan somewhere?
Certainly.
It is in the original comp plan, if I may. So the
okay.
first primary 10 years ago, we were looking very strongly at that, so we didn't.
Will that be in the final document then, or does that...
If that's how you approve it, we can put it in.
I mean, could we add it at this... That'd be
a motion for approval could be to amend certain items and add those to it,
too. Let's say that. One, it's plan design. We've got applications. Some of the engineering's been done. I think it would be But and we know it'll take years to get federal aid. Heck, at the rate we're going, it'll take 20 years to get there.
And when we had that infrastructure discussion with the Planning Commission in Maryland, I think it was just one of those factors that got overseen.
I think that's
in our update process.
That's the only other hard surface addition in the county. I think we've drowned. I mean, it's not like we're opening Pandora's box. Sure. Let's add this project and that project. That would be, and as sitting here as chairman, I can't add that, but I would sure recommend it. Particularly given we may or may not be, at least in the short term, looks like we're moving from a little manufacturing-based economy back to an ag-based economy, and that Hoyg Industrial Area is certainly the value-added ag center of the county at the moment. So just a couple thoughts.
Certainly.
Does anybody want to add it?
So moved.
Whatever it is we're adding. I think just add Hickory Road from 77 to the Hoyg Industrial Complex would be a good way to
word that. Second on that?
Second by Barnard. Moved by Bauman, of course. Any further discussion on that? That would be an amendment, right, to the overall plan. Okay, any further discussion? All right, please vote on the amendment. Okay, in favor, we have Anderson, Gronewald, Bauman, Byers, and Barnard with Adams and Fleece absent. Does that generate any other discussions or comments? Those are just a couple that I ran across.
Also on the, taking the railroad off the south, right, that wouldn't really be a motion.
No, we can amend the map, certainly, by that.
Maybe. Well, let's formalize a little bit. I think an amendment would be in order, a motion for an amendment would be in order to update the maps reflecting the changes in our rail system.
So moved.
So moved by Barnard. Second by Bauman. Any discussion? Please vote. Same way, 5-0. Any other comments or discussions?
Chairman?
Yes.
I wanted to thank, obviously we're paying Mr. Keelan here, but I want to appreciate the effort that the Planning and Zoning Commission, because we've got new members. I think this is their first go-around or in a different role. And you're looking at a program, like you say, it's been 12 years now, and they're updating this. So I imagine it took quite a bit of time and effort to do that. So I appreciate that.
Gary.
Just for information, can you tell us who all is on the board now? We don't get any much that... Who all is on our planning and zoning now?
First of all, we have Melvin Bowman that takes southern...
These are the current ones that's up there now.
Yeah, those are your current ones.
Okay.
Judy Leibel represents the East End by Virginia. Jeff Berricks, over on the east side. Tracy Holzing, who is up at that DeWitt area. And then David Zimmerman down in the Barnston Liberty area. Then you have myself, and then... Doug Ferguson represents Nunavut.
Okay.
So we have a good board.
Yes.
And you're really getting that next generation involved, which I've just kind of sat by silently, but I've seen that develop, and that's really a good thing.
That is true, because we have all facets, professionally and also in the livestock sector and the production sector.
And I guess I would sure encourage... maybe additional interaction between PNC and our board, and at least initially that probably be a little oftener reporting or going over. And this document, really, the board should spend a half a day workshop on. It's much more than a 5-minute report.
Certainly.
And all the population data and the expected growth and or change in the county type thing. It's really meant to be our main guide, and we often, I suppose most governments don't maybe use it as much as we should, because a lot of good stuff in there. Have we voted?
We have to do the resolution.
All right. We've got a motion and a second to approve the entire resolution as amended. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, please vote. And the vote is 5-0 with two absent. To approve, and it is hereby resolution number whatever it was. 10-32 is approved.
One last comment I'd like to build on your comments about the Planning Commission. In my experience, we've worked with roughly about 35 counties across the state, and as with your current Planning Commission, I'd say they're one of the most highly functioning planning commissions I've worked with in terms of their passion to ensure that, you know, the county has opportunities to grow and develop, but yet, you know, protect and preserve agricultural ground for agricultural use. And I acknowledge their efforts to attend statewide planning meetings that not just include their references in GEO Center and Gage County, but the efforts that are going on statewide, the Nebraska Planning and Zoning Association, the Nebraska Chapter of American Planning Association, and their efforts in those capacities as well is acknowledged by us. Thank you all very much. We appreciate working with Gage County, as always.
Thank you, Lonnie. Anything else for the general meeting? Going once, twice, three times, meeting adjourned at 10:23.